This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Welcome to The Hindu's In Focus podcast. I'm Zubeda Hamid, your host for today. The Indian government recently brought in an amendment to the Wildlife Protection Act with regard to captive elephants. This amendment, the rules for which came in last month, regulates the transfer or transport of captive elephants and has sparked an outcry from animal rights activists. Elephants are, according to the Wildlife Protection Act, a Schedule 1 species offered the highest protection under the law. Captive elephants, however, because of their historical role in India, where they have been used in timber logging, they have been part of royal estates, and are still used in temples for religious festivals, come under a special category, but there were still strict rules governing their transfer. Now, however, with this new amendment, the transfer of elephants is allowed for religious or any other purposes. Activists say that this is a vague definition and can revive the illegal commercial trade and trafficking of elephants, something that the country has been trying to curb for decades. Concerns have also been raised about Vantara, Anant Ambani's rehabilitation center in Jamnagar, Gujarat, which has come under criticism for its housing of a large number of elephants. Why was this amendment brought in? What does this mean for the 2,600 or so captive elephants across the country? Are wild elephants continuing to be captured and illegally sold? And what is the way forward when it comes to the rehabilitation of captive elephants in India? We delve into these questions and more with Alok Hisarwala, a lawyer, a researcher, and founder of the Center for Research and Animal Rights based in Goa. Good morning and welcome to the Hindus In Focus podcast, Alok.
Good morning, Zubeda. Thank you for having me here.
Alok, could you explain the captive elephant transport rules 2024 to us? Why were these rules brought in and what are the concerns around them?
So these rules began as a draft amendment to the Wildlife Protection Act as early as the end of 2021, where the first Wildlife Protection Amendment Bill of 2021 was introduced. It was a big pre-planned amendment to the law to upgrade the Wildlife Protection Act on many issues, but it curiously had a provision to legalize, re-permit trade in captive elephants, commercial trade in captive elephants. That was the first provision in the draft, which was tabled in the parliament. It created a huge furor and was sent to the Parliamentary Standing Committee, which at that time on environment climate change, at that time was chaired by Mr. Jairam Ramesh, which led a wide consultation process across the country. And based on those recommendations, a slightly watered down provision was then inserted, which became part of the Wildlife Protection Amendment of 2022, which basically says that elephants can be transferred from one private owner to another as long as the transfer is not commercial. And the purpose for the transfer of ownership has to be either a religious purpose, which is and the second purpose was a more vague idea, which is just defined as any other purpose. So anything could be added to it. And so this became the final provision, which then, I mean, the amendment essentially said that the transfers can happen under certain terms and conditions that the central government will announce. So in 2021, we had a draft bill that said allow commercial trade. In 2022, we had a watered-down amendment that was finally passed that says only non-commercial transfers, subject to certain conditions, which were then enacted in 2024 by these rules that we have just been received these in March, on 14th March, the captive elephant transfer and transport rules. Now, it's kind of curious from my point of view, right? Because as somebody who studies the law on the ownership and trade of captive elephants, or the illegality of ownership and trades of captive elephants in the country and their exploitation, I find this amendment very curious because it doesn't really say anything new, because captive elephants were already allowed to be transferred from one private owner to another private owner as long as the transfer was for a non-commercial reason. So, I mean, there's a long kind of established legal history around this, and I'll touch on it briefly. But what I mean, let me begin with that a little bit for you. So we have a very simple practice in the country, and it's a very problematic practice. And it's been happening for the last 30 to 40 years, where elephants we see in captivity in temples in South India, used for the Puram in Kerala, or also elephants we see, for example, the Amer Fort elephant rides in Jaipur. These are the three big concentrations of captive elephants in the country, outside the sphere of forest departments, which are all in private ownership. Even the elephants in temples, if you look at the papers, they belong to a private owner. Elephants that are used for Puram belong to a private owner. Elephants that are with the Guruvayur Devasam belong to a private owner. All of these elephants don't come from the pool of wild elephants in Kerala or Tamil Nadu or Karnataka. Almost all these captive elephants come from the Northeast. So this is a stated fact. So elephants in private ownership across India come from the Northeast. Why is that? Is there some animal husbandry practice in the Northeast where elephants are giving birth, captive elephants in captivity are giving birth to a whole bunch of captive elephants which are then being sent everywhere? Not at all. The Northeast has historically been a space where elephants are routinely captured from the wild as young calves and then trained into systems of captivity. You know, it's an old traditional system. And then these elephants are traded through illegal traders or traded through traders. You know, it was actually done very openly up until 20 years ago at the Sonpur Mela in Bihar, which happens every year end of November, and which is the biggest cattle fair in the country. And there was an entire Hathi station where 30, 40, 50 elephants would be brought in for sale. And traders would come from, you know, South India to buy these temple elephants from traders in Bihar and UP who had bought them from elephant owners in the Northeast. And then the elephants would be taken to temples in Kerala. So this is a practice which has continued, you know, as late as the early 2000s. But this practice was shut down. It was closed because in 2002, the Wildlife Protection Act was amended to make commercial trade in captive elephants illegal. So it banned it. So what basically happens after 2002 is that all elephant transfers continued, but they became non-commercial. So basically, to give you an example, everybody who started giving their elephants to the other owner by writing a gift deed. That's a standard kind of a format. So you would write a gift deed and say, I can't take care of the elephant anymore. I met this guy who wants to take care of the elephant. So I'm gifting the elephant to this person and I'm transferring the ownership of the elephant to this person. And that was accepted. So a lot of activists conducted lots of investigations. The Wildlife Crime Control Bureau conducted an investigation and they all found that all these non-commercial transfers of elephants were actually leading to, what had just driven the commercial trade underground because nobody was freely handing over an elephant. All these elephant handovers were actually commercial transactions. So by stopping the commercial trade, we just drove the entire trade underground. And a range of cases were filed in the Supreme Court and High Courts, lots of pressure and activism by activists with the forest departments. And slowly in the last 6 to 8 years, we saw almost no transfer of elephants to private owners, to temples, to the Elephant Owners Association in Kerala. As a consequence of this, at least from 2017-18, the number of captive elephants, for example, in temples in Tamil Nadu, in Kerala, have started to come down heavily. Because of which, there was a massive demand from elephant owners, temple trusts, and especially the Puram Festival committees to reallow transfers of elephants. Because, you see, the law hadn't been changed, but because there were so many orders of the Supreme Court and the Forest Department officers were routinely being called in cases by in high courts of the Supreme Court, they just decided we don't want to permit any transfers anymore. It was a kind of an unspoken agreement. So what this 2022 amendment does in a convoluted manner, it basically restates the law by doing that, tells the entire machinery of the Forest Department that we are re-permitting, we are allowing the entire system of elephant transfers again. So now elephants may be transferred once again from the Northeast, which is basically where the elephants really move out from, to people where people want elephants. So it would go to Jaipur, Kerala and Tamil Nadu. But more than that, it says that elephants can be transferred for any other purpose. Now, what does any other purpose mean? So, you know, from the 90s onwards, late 90s onwards, we have led a 20-year incredible activism in our country. And now India is one of the first countries which has not a single circus elephant. There is not a single circus elephant in India. So what does any other purpose mean? Are circuses going to get elephants again? We have been fighting so many cases where begging elephants are not allowed. So for example, you know, there's a historic practice where people would take an elephant from town to beg. Are people going to start using elephants to beg again? There are so many instances where in Goa, where I live, I led a case with the great Norma Alvarez, the environment lawyer, to stop elephant rides in these Western Ghats with these spice farms, where we found some 12 elephants were being exploited very badly, beaten and, you know, overused, kept in a pond of water all day, where 100 tourists, one by one, would climb the elephant to get a trunk bath. What does any other purpose mean? Would that be allowed? So, you know, it's a very problematic amendment, because what it does is it takes us back, it rewinds the clock, it's regressive, because it's very cleverly done, because the government is like, you know what, we haven't really changed the law, we've just restated the existing legal position. But by doing that, they have undermined the gains of animal activism of the last 20 years, where forest departments and forest officers now have been given a fillip to go ahead and allow these transfers, because none of these transfers can happen without a jurisdictional forest officer signing on the papers. You know, and that's the thing, right? There is a lot of babudam in this. So if an elephant has to move from Assam to Bihar, both the forest officers of Assam and Bihar have to sign these documents. And this is a key thing, because everybody wants a transfer permit. The transfer permit is the key thing. And what we had successfully stopped was the issuing of these transfer permits, because we said there's far too much illegality. So therefore, these transfer permits should not be allowed. And now this amendment says transfer permits can be allowed.
That was a very clear picture, Alok. Thank you. And it as you say, we're going backwards in terms of going back to an era where these illegal transfers can happen. Talk to us a little bit about why the elephant alone of all wild animals is treated in this manner by the Wildlife Protection Act.
Very interesting question, and thank you for asking that question. I call it the captive elephant exception in Indian wildlife law, because we protect the elephant with the highest protection Indian law can offer. At the same time, we allow a class of elephants, and the only class of wild animals, no other wild animal is allowed to be treated like that, to be privately owned, traded, commercially used and exploited. So it's a very bizarre exception. Let me try and briefly explain to you why I think it happens. It happens because in 1972, when the Wildlife Protection Act was enacted, see, the Wildlife Protection Act in paper was an extremely progressive law. It had problems. It still has many problems. You know, every law has to evolve and get better. But the Wildlife Protection Act is a very progressive law. It banned hunting. It protected animals, wild animals, in their natural habitats. So at some level, at its core, it recognized their right of freedom and autonomy and free movement. And they were and all these animals, you know, so the most interesting thing is, but in 1972, the Wildlife Protection Act did not protect the elephant as a Schedule 1 animal. So it protected the elephant as a Schedule 2 animal. And it carried a sub-definition of captive elephants in the Act, and defined captive elephants as cattle. It's very, really interesting. But very soon, within 10 to 15 years, all of this was changed. And the elephant was protected as a species, Elephas maximus, moved to the Schedule 1, and the cattle category was removed. Okay. The reason why all of this was done is because I think in 1972, when they enacted the law, they were like, okay, you know what? We want to protect all elephants as free animals, but so many elephants are already in captivity in India under private ownership, because it's an old historic practice. So let's find a way to continue and regulate this, but also prevent new elephants coming into captivity. So that is a gentle kind of a push of the law. The law has gently been trying to say, let's discourage new elephants coming into captivity. Because ecologists and wildlife conservationists and wildlife scholars and scientists have been arguing for a very long time that elephants just don't do well in captivity. A simple point. Because elephants are inherently wild animals. They've never been domesticated. Even in captivity, they're wild animals. Just because they're in captivity and they learn, even if they form a bond with you or they listen to the commands of the mahout through whatever system of either violent or love-based training, I don't know. I think most of the training is violent. It does not take away the fact the elephant is a wild animal. It's not a domestic animal. It's very, very important to understand that distinction. So the law has struggled with this binary, this duality, because the law wants to, at one level, protect the elephant as a Schedule 1 animal, as a species. At another level, the government is trying to find a compromise between this huge, massive cultural demand in India to have elephants in captivity for religious and cultural reasons, and the fact that so many elephants are already in captivity and that people own them. So this is a complicated kind of a tussle through which this exception has continued and continued and continued and continued and continued. The worrying trend, Zubeda, is that from 1972 to 2002, over 50 years, the law was amended gradually to discourage captive ownership, captive trade. Okay. But this current amendment, that's why this current amendment is worrying, because it sort of restates the legal position and allows it say, you know, in a way it says, let's maintain the status quo and let's make the status quo stronger and let people get elephants from owners, other owners. Now, this is a tricky point, all right? So the government says, if anybody has a captive elephant they can't take care of, that person can give the captive elephant to somebody else who can take care of the elephant. Okay. Now, you may ask me, why am I worried about that? Isn't that a good thing, right? If somebody can generally not take care of the elephant, let the elephant go to somebody who can take care of the elephant. Now, this is a myth, Zubeda, because the elephant is seen as a tradable commodity. It has historically been seen as a tradable commodity. It was a tradable commodity by the Forest Department. For example, up until the 80s and 90s, forest departments routinely sold forest camp elephants through a price list. They followed a colonial system to temples, to private owners. It was always done with a revenue model. So because the elephant is seen as a commodity, because private ownership of the elephant is still legally allowed, just by saying that we are allowing elephants to be transferred as a non-commercial transfer, not a commercial transfer, doesn't do enough, because the elephant will always be traded. You know, they will find different ways of doing it, which is what we've been saying. So it's a problematic thing because the one thing is the elephant will be traded. The second thing is the law, now these 2024 rules that have been enacted, because I think the government actually, you know, it's interesting. The government is actually once again trying to find a fine balance between a lot of the demands that activists are making and pushing the government. At the same time, lobbying by the elephant owner lobbies and the religious and cultural lobbies. So the compromise the government has made in the rules are the following. The government says two or three things. It says that only elephants that are in private ownership today, or on the day the rules came into force, that is 14th March 2024, only those elephants must be allowed to be transferred. That means no new elephants can come in, okay, unless an elephant is born in captivity, okay. But elephants are very rarely born in captivity. The rate of an elephant being born in captivity and surviving to a healthy adult life is very, very low. So the government recognizes that, which is why they want to make sure that the elephants that are transferred or are eligible for transfer are limited to the cutoff of whatever elephants we have today. That is exactly what the rules say, Rule 7, if you see my representation. But there's a problem here, Zubeda. We don't have a list of how many elephants are in private captivity. We have no idea. It is a completely dark gray area. Let me give you an example. In 2014, a Bangalore-based organization called the Wildlife Rescue Rehabilitation Center filed a writ petition in the Supreme Court asking for improved welfare of captive elephants and raised a lot of these points. And one of the things they asked the Supreme Court was to give us a clear statistic of how many elephants were there. I mean, ask the Supreme Court to direct the forest departments to give us a clear table or a figure and a list of how many elephants are in captivity in the country. The Supreme Court kept asking the Ministry of Environment and Forest to release this data. And finally, the court got frustrated and the court directed the ministry to conduct an immediate survey or a census. So within 3 months, a detailed census was done, and the ministry filed an affidavit, and we were told there are 2,675 elephants in captivity in the country, out of which 1,800 are with private owners. Okay, and state-wise data was given. This was in December 2018, January 2019. The most problematic state where illegality of elephant capture and ownership begins is Arunachal Pradesh. The Forest Department of Arunachal refused to cooperate with the Ministry of Environment and Forest, so much so that the MOEF, in its affidavit to the Supreme Court, expresses its frustration. It says that we were delayed in submitting this data because Arunachal just did not give us a response. So finally, after lots of pushing, the Arunachal state of Arunachal gives the MOEF only a figure. It says we have 108 elephants. No list, no names, no microchips, no information on who the owners are. Okay, so, and that is added to the total figure of 2,675, and we have 108 includes that. In the last 3 years, 2 years, from 50 elephants from Arunachal have been transferred to Jamnagar. And this has been recorded by many activists, particularly by a journalist in Arunachal Pradesh, the editor of Arunachal Times, Tongam Rina, has written a story saying around 50 elephants have gone in the last 3 years from Arunachal Pradesh to Jamnagar to the Vantara Center as rescues. And recently, in a case that's happening in the Assam High Court, Arunachal Pradesh has filed a fresh affidavit after a lot of pressure. And they have given us a fresh list of how many elephants they have. So they had 108 in 2019, 50 they gave away in the last 3 years to Jamnagar. They should have 60, 70 elephants, correct? They have given us a list saying they have 140 elephants today.
Does this mean that they're continuing to capture elephants from the wild and then show them as captive?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is because this has been the historic practice. So, for example, to prevent exactly this, the Ministry of Environment and Forest in 2008 issued the Project Elephant Guidelines of 2008. The guidelines specifically said that if an elephant owner in a village tells the forest department that mere ghar mein jo hathi hai, usne bachcha paida kiya hai. So my hathi has given birth to a baby. The forest department is required to conduct a DNA verification that the child, the calf born, actually is as a maternity test with the mother that is in possession of the owners to make sure that the calf was not caught from the wild. Okay. This is a 2008 mandate. There is not a single DNA profile of any elephant that has ever been done. The 2024 rules, that's the second check and balance the government has put in. The government has said that all elephants must be genetically mapped. Okay, so it's great. So the first condition was that every elephant should be in ownership today. The second condition is that they should be genetically mapped. By doing that, the government is recognizing that there is a lot of illegal capture and illegal trade and regularization of illegal capture and illegal trade. So, you know, once again, we have written to the ministry and we have said, you know, we recognize that you're trying to strike a balance, right? Because we do have a cultural demand. We can't just completely forget it. And there are all these elephants in captivity. But you can't permit transfers until and unless we have a list, a finite database of how many elephants are there. Otherwise, what we have just seen in Arunachal will keep happening. You know, this elephant will keep appearing from places. And frankly, you know, as Indians, we have mastered the art of fudging legal documentation. So, you know, I won't be surprised that somebody will very creatively come up with a system of fudging DNA testing also.
Tell us about this genetic profile a little bit more. You said it was brought in as a safeguard measure to ensure that wild elephants are not captured and then shown as born in captivity. What is happening with this database that is to be created at the Wildlife Institute of India? Has it progressed at all?
So it is being conducted by a scientist, I think Sudipta Mandal at the Wildlife Institute of India. We are very happy that it's happening. It's much needed. It's been a long-standing demand of the wildlife community in the country. And I've just been tracking a lot of information from everywhere. And I've been told that it's very interesting because apparently one of the first states they've done for genetic mapping is Arunachal and Assam. And most of Assam, Arunachal, and also they're doing Kerala. I think it is a three-step process. The first step is collection of the sample. The second step is creating the genetic profile, which is done in a lab at WII. And then the third step is in creating a consolidated database. So what we are saying is, don't release part data. You see, Zubeda, because if you want to control trade, or if you want to control the potential of illegality in a regulated trade, you must first have a finite list of how many elephants are going to be transferred. So we are saying, please don't allow any transfers to happen under these new rules till we have a full list of all the elephants, because apparently it will take some time because it's a very slow process and we only have one facility which does this genetic profiling. And I think there are close to 2,500 elephants they have to complete. So we have no timeline. We have no idea what's happening. We don't have a status report, which all should be public because in the end, it's a Schedule 1 protected animal. And our biggest demand is that there should be a publicly published database on the MOEF website. Everyone should be able to see how many elephants in private ownership are in the country today, who do they belong to, and what is the genetic profile. And if they are transferred from one owner to another, that should be updated all the time. So we should know this. We should be able to track it.
Let's go back a little, Alok, to what we were speaking about earlier when you said that one of the criteria of these rules is that elephants can only be transferred if the owner feels that they are not able to adequately care for them and they're going to transfer it to an owner who can care for them. So what should the protocol ideally be for this? How should captive elephants be maintained? Do the forest camps, for instance, that Tamil Nadu, Karnataka and Assam run, are they good environments for captive elephants? And let's go back a little bit to what you also said about elephants being transferred from the Northeast to Jamnagar. Is that an ideal facility, or it's been in the midst of controversy recently? Is it not an ideal facility?
So I'll give you there's a couple of points here. The first is the Wildlife Amendment Act of 2022, which was passed, which, among other things, permitted, restated the legal position of elephant transfers, also for the first time has a provision for surrender of an elephant. Okay. So, for example, the law says that if a private owner cannot take care of the elephant, I can surrender the elephant back to the forest department and the ownership certificate can be cancelled. So my first question is, if people are transferring elephants because they can't take care of the elephant, why not just surrender the elephant to the forest department? You see, why not just surrender the elephant to the forest department? Why must you give the elephant to a private owner, another private owner? So the first problematic issue here is the relationship the law has created and continued through colonial times of captive elephants and private, the possibility of ownership, private ownership of captive elephants. The fact that people see an elephant as private property, they're not willing to surrender them. So they would much rather make some money out of it and trade the elephant. And the fact that this option has been created, most people will not surrender the elephant. That's my first issue. My first issue is that, see, ideally as an activist, every captive elephant should be surrendered to a rescue facility. Okay. And these rescue facilities can be of many kinds. And we need all of them. We desperately need all of them. Okay. Because captivity is not suited for elephants. Elephants suffer in captivity. They are mistreated. They are beaten. They are tortured. The entire system of captivity is to break the spirit of the animal. And you know this. So, you know, and we've seen this a million times, horrible cases. So, yes, every elephant should be surrendered to a rescue center. Now, there is a regime of how a captive elephant must be rescued or rehabilitated in the country. It's been designed by the Ministry of Environment and Forests and the Central Zoo Authority. They've done a lot of work on it. So there are two separate regimes. One is a regime that's called forest camps, where forest camp elephants are kept. And the second is a regime which is an elephant rescue center or elephant care facility, where elephants that have been mistreated in captivity and private ownership, who have a very different experience of life and have been away from the wild for a very long time, have to be rehabilitated. The latter, the elephants that go to elephant care facilities specifically designed for captive elephants, require a lot more care and attention. And because these the forest camp elephants are often elephants that are captured from the wild because of human-elephant conflict or calves were orphaned and stuff like that. And they go through a training process to become forest camp elephants. They do patrolling duties. They are used for sometimes for to mitigate human-elephant conflict. They're trained as kumkis, which is a very violent training method, by the way. And they're also trained for tourist rides. So there's a lot of work that has been done on it. And it is believed that rescuing facilities for forest captive elephants must be specially designed, specially dedicated, must be scientifically different from the ones that we see as forest camp facilities. Having said that, all elephant rescue facilities must be in the natural habitats of the elephants. There is no doubt about that. Okay. Because, you know, in the end, we want the elephant to be in its natural habitat. We want the elephant, even if it's a captive elephant that's been rehabilitated, to be able to go back and forage and walk in the wild and, you know, find a herd and hang out with a herd. You know, do all these natural things that the elephants in captivity just don't get to do. Having said that, the reality of our situation in our country is that we only have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 dedicated captive elephant rescue facilities in the country. Let me give you their names. We have one of the oldest facilities is the Wildlife SOS facility. They have two centers, one in Mathura, the other one is in Haryana. And I've never been to it. I only heard great things about it. It's one of the oldest facilities. It's run by Karthik Satyanarayan, who's a deeply committed elephant activist and an elephant rescuer. And I'm sure, you know, it's extremely expensive. It has huge challenges and they do their best. And I'm sure, and from what I hear from lots of people, it's at full capacity all the time. And then there is a fantastic new facility that the Karnataka Forest Department has set up in outside of Bangalore, which has rescued a lot of temple elephants from Karnataka. And again, it's at full capacity. We have a facility that I've seen in MR Paliam outside of Trichy by the Tamil Nadu Forest Department, a dedicated facility for captive elephants who are rescued from temples, different from all the forest camp facilities in Tamil Nadu. Once again, it's always at overcapacity and they're always struggling. For example, I have a case I filed in the Madras High Court for an elephant to be rescued and rehabilitated. And I know that that elephant is not going to go right now because the forest department facility doesn't have space for her. So in such a situation, the Vantara facility in Jamnagar is, you know, it's a huge facility. It has lots of captive elephants. They take excellent care of captive elephants. I have personally gone and seen it. Even though I'm deeply disturbed by the fact that they have taken so many elephants from the Northeast who did not need rescuing, I think. So, you know, because Vantara has space for taking more elephants for rescue, you know, elephant activists on the ground, you know, because they have nowhere else to send an elephant. We are very happy to send the elephant to a facility that can take good care of them because the elephants are suffering. But in an ideal situation, it would be fantastic if organizations like the Reliance Foundation works with forest departments in the country and upgrades so many forest camp facilities to create parallel dedicated captive elephant facilities for them. Because, for example, recently two elephants of ISKCON in Calcutta, an elephant in ISKCON temple in outside of Calcutta in West Bengal, killed this mahout. The temple trust got really scared and the elephants had to be rehabilitated somewhere. Now, the elephants are being sent from West Bengal to Jamnagar. And the World Animal Protection has written a very interesting statement saying that why can't we use this as an opportunity to work with the West Bengal Forest Department to create a dedicated facility for these elephants in West Bengal? It need not be a forest camp. Okay, they're not saying forest camp, and I agree with them. But let's work with the department to create a new facility. That's how new facilities start. I mean, the Karnataka facility started because two elephants were rescued by an organization, and it pushed the forest department to start thinking on those lines. The Mathura facility started because Karthik had rescued some elephants, and it pushed the forest department to think on those lines. The Tamil Nadu facility was started because the department was pushed. So I think we have to do that. You know, we must create more facilities in natural habitats. So I'm not saying anything against Vantara. I mean, you know, if there's nothing else there, people are sending elephants to Vantara, which is fine. And they take excellent care of elephants. But I would like to see more rescue facilities, ideally in natural habitats of elephants.
I'm just going to ask you two quick questions. One is that, do you think that the provisions in the new rules, which are so vague as to tell us that captive elephants can now be, ownership can now be transferred for religious or any other purpose, is going to reignite all of those old illegal trading networks that we had and that we had managed to stop?
So, for example, I'll tell you, it was very curious. You know, in 2011, a Wildlife Crime Control Bureau officer from their office in Calcutta called Chaturbhuja Bhaira went on a department mission to do an investigation of illegal trade of elephants. So he goes and parks himself in the district of Namsai and Pasighat in Arunachal, where notoriously a lot of elephants are captured and used for timber logging. And he discovers that so many elephants are being issued ownership certificates to a resident of Pasighat and Namsai called Jacob Koshi. Okay, so what is this Malayali Syrian Christian man doing sitting in the deep forest of Arunachal, showing himself as a resident of the village and taking ownership certificates of these elephants who are then finding themselves immediately to the north, to Kerala? So the illegal trade of captive elephants is deeply entrenched by a network of traders. And because the demand for the elephants is so high, you know, we have seen so many reports from Kerala, from the Puram committees. I have documented, Zubaida, 160 elephant deaths of Puram elephants, used for Puram. 160 elephant deaths from 2018 till today. We have a name-by-name list, date when the elephant died, with evidence. Most of these elephants have died at a young age of 40 and 50, 30, because of torture. And which also just means that the number of pool of elephants used for the Puram has come down heavily. So there's a massive demand. There's a figure that's been floating around that the Elephant Owner Association is raising money. And they're saying it openly. Openly saying, we have raised money to buy 100 elephants from the Northeast. Just with these new rules. They're not even pretending that these elephants are coming for free. Or through a gift or non-commercial. They're openly saying it. So I have no doubt that this delicate balance that the ministry tried to strike between meeting a cultural demand and not going beyond the remit of the Wildlife Protection Act, and thinking that because if you'll protect the elephants by creating all these data, by put these restrictions of GNA testing and make sure there are no commercial transfers, you know, things will not be so bad. Not at all. They will game the system. They are masters at it. The elephant traders will game the system.
So, Alok, we spent a lot of time talking about how these amendments could put, are now allowing the trade of captive elephants again. And do you think, and do our activists concerned that all of the illegal networks that were stopped for 50 years could reawaken again?
So, Zubaida, I'm going to try and keep it short this time. So, yes, the answer is in the affirmative, that a big yes. We are very concerned that the illegal networks of elephants, of the trade of capture and trade of elephants, will be reactivated. Let me give you a quick example. In 2019, 2020, the Kerala Forest Department, based on many complaints, raided. Actually, this is what had happened. A very famous elephant owner of Kerala called K. Shaji gave a YouTube video, and he basically, you know, had a fully. Talked about how he has so many elephants, and if anybody wants an elephant, he can organize an elephant, and you know, why are people saying there are no elephants? I have so many elephants in my backyard. So he basically got carried away on a YouTube interview, and it led to a massive raid by the Kerala Forest Department of his lands and properties. And they found many elephants tied up in his backyard. He went absconding, and it was a 6-month chase, after which K. Shaji was found right at the beginning of COVID, around March 2022, hiding in New Bombay, from Kerala to New Bombay. And, you know, K. Shaji was a chilling reminder for us that while we don't hear or see so much about illegal elephant trade, it still happens. It's super underground, and the supply demand equations are still very much alive. So our fear is that, and the other proof we have why illegal networks of trade will begin is that I personally believe that the 2022 amendment, to the extent that it free permits transfer of elephants, and these 2024 rules are a product of massive lobbying by the Kerala Elephant Owners Association with the Ministry of Environment and Forest. They have lobbied for a very long time with the ministry to re-permit elephant transfers because they're frustrated the elephants are not coming. So now the thing is, the minute you start something like this, as I said, the change of hands of the elephant will always be commercial. And because commercial transactions cannot be allowed, it'll all be illegal and underhanded, which also means there will be no regulation over elephant pricing. I'm not saying there should be a regulated transfer of elephants in a commercial manner either. But all I'm trying to say is that there are so many problems with this process, because it assumes that there is a supply. There are all these elephants available. So through animal husbandry, that all these elephants are captive born, that they are legally acquired in the first place. Because the demand for the elephants is so high, because people are willing to pay so much money for the elephants, because in Kerala, for the Puram, the elephant owners rent an elephant, like Techikottukuva Ramachandran is rented for 6 lakhs a day. So, you know, it's a lot of money to be made. It's a multi-million dollar industry, fool you not. And yes, people will pay a lot of money for the elephants. People will want a lot of elephants. People will want a particular kind of elephant. Very important. They don't want just any elephant. They want elephants that look regal and are tall, have perfect tusks. So that kind of an elephant will be looked for in the wild. They will look for an elephant that will meet these characteristics and capture it. So yes, all of these illegal systems will come back to life. Let me give you another example. In Feb last year, I went to Assam with a journalist for an investigation, and I interviewed an elephant catcher and tamer deep in the Moran village, which was for the Moran tribe. And I asked him a question. I said, are you hearing of more and more people asking you for new elephants? And he told me, he said, the law has been changed, and suddenly lots of people are coming to me saying, get ready. Keep a supply of elephants ready. We want new elephants. So the illegal capture, illegal training, illegal trade of elephants, which will lead to their tremendous exploitation. And it's, you know, once an elephant comes into private ownership and comes in the hands of private owners in the south or wherever, in the north or in Bihar, they're banished for life. They're banished for life. These elephants... because they're a tradable commodity, the idea is there's a rule, the thumb rule in elephant ownership, that the elephant must pay for itself. This is the other very problematic idea. There is no duty of care. So the elephant owners believe the elephant costs so much money, he has to work for his keep. So look at this now, this diabolic kind of system we've created. So these elephant owners from the Northeast are saying, we can't take care of the elephant, so we are giving the elephant to somebody who can take care of the elephant. That person acquires the elephant and says, oh, you know what? Elephant upkeep is very expensive. For me to upkeep the elephant has to work. It has to work for its money, its food. So the elephant will be made to work. So basically, in many ways, this delicate balance that the state is trying to strike, according to me, is an impossible balance to strike. It's just impossible, because elephant captivity is so deeply entrenched with culture, but also a commercial sort of value attached to both the price of the elephant and the use of the elephant. So it's a very complicated kind of marriage between culture, private law of ownership, or private law of ownership, and commercial exploitation. So, and all these three things work in tandem to create the problem that we see in elephant captivity, which is not going to go away with this amendment. It's only going to become much worse.
So quickly towards our last question, Alok, what do you think our future path needs to look like? One, as you pointed out, is there is a huge cultural demand for elephants. Do we need to perhaps move away from a situation where we demand elephants for religious processes? And second, what do we finally do with captive elephants? As you told us, there are private and government-run facilities for their rehabilitation, but is there any possibility of their being rewilded again? Has this been attempted anywhere and has it worked?
Once again, great questions, Zubeda. I mean, so my first point is that I'll make a couple of quick points. The first point I want to make is that as activists, we have to have a very clear demand and a very clear united voice, and we need to think through a lot of things. We can't attack culture. Okay, it's been tried and has failed. It doesn't work. It is counterproductive. We must understand that we come from a deeply religious cultural society, and we have to find a language that celebrates culture and encourages culture to transform itself. So instead of what the law has done, a regressive step, we need a transformative move, a transformative potential, transformative movement that says, let's celebrate culture, but make it compassionate. So this idea of using live elephants, we need to kind of bring out a conversation that this should not happen. And it's already happening, right? So the most amazing thing has come from Kerala itself, from engineering, from Kerala engineers, a group of four friends in Kerala, okay? One Hindu, one Muslim, one Christian, a fantastic story, come together. And they've created the first set of robotic elephants in Kerala. They're incredible. The first robotic elephant was gifted to a temple in Kerala, received by a very progressive priest. I was there outside of Thrissur last year by Peter, and I saw the entire village gather with amazement. Nobody was disappointed. They were excited. The kids were excited. The elephant was moving its tail. The eyes were moving. The trunk was throwing water. It could carry the weight of people. It was fantastic. So they did a full Melam and a full Puram procession with that elephant. Now, four such elephants have been gifted, one in Bangalore, one in Tamil Nadu, a second one in Kerala. And more temples want robotic elephants. There is a huge, huge active media campaign against robotic elephants by the Kerala Elephant Owners Association. And it's really unfortunate. I would like to see a situation which the state can do. The state should play that role. The state should create a committee. Put the elephant owners, activists, temples, festival committees, wildlife experts, veterinarians together. Sit together and find a solution. But with a goal to phasing out, eventual phasing out of using of live elephants. Okay. Mainly because if nothing else, humans die. How many? I have documented just from this year's Puram that started in October last year, me and my team have documented over 60 incidents where elephants have run amok across Kerala, and many mahouts have got severely injured, fatally injured, some have actually died. It's very dangerous. That's my first point. So, you know, transformation through culture, through technology. The second point is what you rightly said, which I don't have a perfect answer for. What do you do with so many elephants in captivity? I mean, you know, even if you add a Vantara, we have another 2,000 elephants that need to be rescued. Where are they going to go? So we already have this problem. We already are sitting on this problem where we don't know what to do with these 2,000 elephants. Let me give you an example. The Kerala Elephant Owners Rules, the 2012 Kerala Elephant Captive Elephant Care and Maintenance Rules mandate 65 as an age of retirement for the elephant. The TN Rules, the Tamil Nadu Captive Elephant Care and Management Rules mandate age 60 as retirement for the elephant. So many elephants remain in private ownership or in temples, are used, are exploited, are made to work way beyond this age. often because we just have no place to retire them to. Okay. So, I mean, rewilding is a great noble concept that, you know, we are very far away from, and very few cases of real captive elephants rewilding has happened because it requires commitment and work and time and space. But just rescuing them and putting them into proper dedicated rehabilitation facilities is a, despite Vantara having a massive rescue facility, is still a very uphill challenge because of A, culture, B, private ownership, C, just non-availability of facilities and spaces. So we have a long way to go. And I'm really sad to see that the state has enacted this new rule, but not done other things. Like, it's not thinking about where should elephants be rescued to, not created more money for elephant rescue facilities, not created a program. You know, invite us, invite activists working on the field, and let's design a program, a government program that works with different communities and talks about, you know, talks about the need to move away from using live elephants and, for various reasons, the danger it poses, the cruelty it commits to the elephant, and all of these issues. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot that we are not doing. And by just doing this one thing, by allowing transfers and ignoring the other, it shows that the state, it's not doing its job fully. And that's, for me, is the more worrying part. Because in 2024, we should be having a conversation about moving away from using captive elephants and not encouraging and perpetuating the use of captive elephants.
Thank you so much for speaking to us today, Alok.
Thank you, Zubeda.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.